Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
Hey, this is J. Michael Michael for LA Talk Radio. And if you're like me and you love talk radio, but you can't find anything worth listening to in the AM dial, then how about this? How about you tune into LA Talk Radio? You see, LA Talk Radio is the biggest and the best in LA, and it's a .com. So we have it all from sports to music to self-help to just about anything, including talk. And right now, we have the new writer's favorite show and the old writer's favorite show, Writer's Block 1-on-1. So sit back, pour some more wine, have yourself a box of chocolates, light up that cigar, and enjoy the show because it all starts right now.
You're listening to The Writer's Block with Jim Christina and Russ Avison right here on LA Talk Radio.
Head out on the highway, looking for adventure in whatever comes our way. Yeah, gotta go make it happen. Take the world in a loving place. Fire all of the guns across the sun, explode into space. I like smoking light.
Now, if you don't know what that song is, you're not a child of the 60s.
That's true.
That is such a great tune.
I know. Maybe we should just make this, all 60s and 70s hit hour.
Well, we have another one.
Oh, okay. All right.
But, you know, I have to tell you that in my after prom in 1967, May of 1967, Steppenwolf was the band that played at University Lanes in Chula Vista, California. No, El Cajon.
Really?
That's where we did our after party at El Cajon Lanes. University Lanes in El Cajon, and Steppenwolf was the band. It was before they were really big.
Oh, mm-hmm. I remember I was at a high school dance at Taft High School, and we had Three Dog Night play after the football game, and it was 50 cents.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Well, at our prom, it was the Sun Rays. I don't know if you guys remember the Sun Rays.
No.
It's when, after the Wilson brothers fired their father, Maury, the Beach Boys.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He put together another band, and he made them sound exactly like the Beach Boys. And they were called the Sun Rays, and they did one song called Sun, Sun, Sun.
Yeah.
There you go.
I remember that.
Yeah. There you go. Yeah. See? Once you say, Sun, Sun, Sun. Yeah, I remember that.
Did you ever hear of the band that never ended up falling apart before it started?
Which one?
It was Neil Young, Rick James, and the guys in Steppenwolf.
Really?
Is that right?
Yeah. Rick James had been, he was AWOL from either the Navy or the Army. I can't remember. He was picked up, and that was kind of what ended up being the band breaking up. Neil Young went back to Canada, and then Steppenwolf went on to be Steppenwolf.
Yeah, wow. Steppenwolf was a bitchin' band.
Yeah.
Well, we used to go up to Kearny Mesa, in 1966 and 67. Gary Puckett played up there.
Oh, sure. And the Union Gap.
Yeah, and at the bowling alley.
Uh-huh. Yeah. I had a friend of mine who dated the drummer from Steppenwolf.
Oh, is that right?
Yes. Yeah.
Dated the drummer?
Yes.
Wait a minute. Oh, a female friend.
Yeah. Yes.
Oh, okay.
I do have both.
You lost me there for a minute. I mean, these two guys from Ohio, they're over here going, California people. Well, actually, one of them is from California.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, why don't you introduce them?
Well, I'm going to. It seems though this is the one-on-one. We're not going to go through the usual BS.
Okay.
We're just going to get right down to it. We have in the studio with us tonight, we have some really nice people. We have Cher Thompson.
Hi.
And we have Neil Johnson.
Right.
And they have written a book called A Time to Wander, and it's about hitting the road with using your thumb. And so without any further bullshit from me, how about we just welcome them to the writer's block?
Yay!
Hey, guys.
Hey.
It's really nice having you here.
Well, thanks for having us.
Oh, this is like, we warned you about this. Okay. Anyway, welcome. And the book, I just finished it last night. Great read.
Well, thanks.
And I have to disagree with you. The ending is not all that bad. It's not sad.
No. No.
It's bittersweet.
It's real life.
Yeah.
You know, it's okay. I mean, you know, things happen. There's a piece in the book that I gave you today that does exactly that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I get it. Or at least I got it. I don't know if Russ did.
I don't get much.
Yeah.
But I thought, the ending, and of course, we don't want to give anything away, but the ending was very fitting, and it seemed real. It was correct.
It was correct. It was really correct. Because, I mean, we've all gone through that angst.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but do I call him? Do I not call him? Do I call her? Do I not call her? You know, when is this pain in my heart going to go away? Crap like that.
Yeah.
We really wanted to leave it so that the reader could put themselves into that situation and feel, you know, that they could decide for themselves how things were going to go.
You know, well, I think we finally figured it out when you went to the reunion.
Yeah.
You know, I figured that pretty much told the story right there.
Yeah. But it was interesting. The book was, it was kind of a two-parter in the sense that the beginning was just all about this relationship happening in a certain time in our country's history that was, you know, very poignant. And then it switches to all these little stories about being on the road, which each one kind of stood out all by itself. And then it all kind of culminates at the end.
Right.
Right. And we think also the unique part is that it's in two different voices. So we have the female voice, myself, and then the male voice, and you, which is Neil. And you just get an idea, which maybe, you know, I know my girlfriends knew how I felt. And but I never knew how a 19-year-old guy or a 20-year-old guy would feel. And so throughout...
They don't.
They don't. So, you know, I think that's pretty much, it wasn't like one author that was fitting in two voices.
Right.
We each had our own separate attitudes throughout
that was apparent.
Yeah.
It really was.
Well, we even tried to, if in my chapters, I would write Cheryl's voice in, and then she would come back and go, no, I wouldn't say that or think that. And so then she would come in, and then she would rewrite the dialogue, and then I'd have to respond back for it. And hence, 8 years of writing.
Well, you know, it's like I told you, I collaborated on a book with another writer. And it's hard.
Yeah.
You know, fortunately, we got lucky, and you know, we're both writing about the same quality.
Yeah.
So it meshed together pretty well. But, I mean, I can imagine you guys years apart.
Yeah.
And states apart.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you pulled it off.
You
really
did.
Well.
It pulled it off beautifully because it was really well done. It's Lena and Chris.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And Chris, of course, with a K.
Of course. Chris Christopherson.
Okay.
Okay, there you go.
So I just need to know, did Chris ever get drafted?
Oh, wait a minute. Yeah. No, you'll have to read the rest of the book.
I read the whole book.
Yeah.
There's something in there that talks about that.
I didn't read that.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah. So you'll have to reread it.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'll reread that section.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it starts out, you know, the weekend of May 4th, we both went to Kent State.
Right.
And however, we were there the year after the May 4th tragic shootings. So we decided to start in a tribute to the May 4th event on that weekend. And so Lena and Chris are there during that time. But when the 4 days are over, that happened, you know, ended in tragically and the school shut down, they return the next year and they experience, we have the whole backdrop of the 70s where we incorporate everything that we felt college students went through and felt their feelings and what they had to deal with during that era. So you have the Vietnam War, you know, the backdrop of that always in the back of your mind. And then you have, you know, women's lib and the pill and open relationships and everything that was just bursting open in our country during that time.
The sexual revolution was happening big time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I remember. And see, May 4th, 1970?
Right.
Correct.
Yeah. Yeah. I was on a Huey helicopter going into Cambodia.
Ooh. Yeah,
I got back just in time to go into the Cambodian incursion in 1970.
Well, that's when this—that's what. Triggered
that's
what
triggered.
Thing.
That's what triggered Kent State.
That's what triggered it.
Yeah, so. I was actually at Ohio State at the time, and Ohio State had much, much more damage, and you know the riots were huge.
Yeah,
but you know there wasn't a loss of life.
Yeah, unfortunately.
Yeah.
I remember reading in the Stars. We got the Stars and Stripes. They helicoptered them out to us because we were in Cambodia like, I don't know, 40 days.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody brought us Stars and Stripes out, and there's a big shooting at Kent State, four students dead or whatever it was. And I handed it to the troop commander, and he's looked at it, and he goes, shit. You know, it's like, God, is it never going to stop?
Yeah. And you know what? They have the 50th anniversary coming up next year, and they're having a big tribute. Every year they do still. We've gone to a few of the vigils over that time period, and next year is the big 50th anniversary at Kent State.
Better than a recreation, I guess.
Something we talked on the phone. I got to ask you about your writing name. Do you?
Oh yeah, Cheryl Thompson. Yeah. So my name is, you know, my real name, as you know, is Cheryl.
Right.
But I picked that as a pen name because I teach students from different countries. I teach them English, and they couldn't get over past the YL when they look at my name. Yeah. They go, Sherry. And so they started calling me Teacher Shara, and I liked it. And
so you stuck with that?
I stuck with it, yeah.
All right. Well, the reason, but I was going to say that Cheryl and I know each other from junior high and high school.
Oh, yes.
And last night we were chatting on the phone, and we had gone to Crosby, Stills, and Nash concert in June of 1970, and the song Ohio that they had just written, they played that one of the first times that they had
that's
that
when
song.
Neil Young was with them, yes. Crosby, Stills, Nash, and Young,
at the Forum.
Right, right. And then I ended up going to Kent. My mom left California and went back to Ohio, where she's originally from, and I followed her after I got out of high school. So went to Kent at that time because it was the year after the shootings. They were, you know, it was people were taking their kids out of Kent. So I was able to get a nice financial aid package for going to Kent.
Please, we need students.
Yeah. And it ended up being a very volatile time because there was a lot of big reaction all over the country to the shootings, of course. So that's, and then I met Neil, and we actually participated in a lot of the anti-war demonstrations and all that. And probably one of your questions is when you reconnected 38 years later, you know, which is true. We hadn't, you know, after we broken up, we hadn't talked in about 38 years. And thanks to Facebook, we started remembering the things that we did. Yeah. And it was such a 70s, just classic 70s tale that we decided, you know what, we need to write this. And so that's how the whole thing started.
Well, I'm glad you did, because in reading it, I mean, it brought me back.
Right.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And there were two phrases in there that I remember: out of sight and bitchin'.
Yeah.
And I when I read those, I remember that.
I still use bitchin'.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you're still in the past.
I am. I think I am.
Bitchin' was, when I was in California in the mid-60s, my dad was teaching at Berkeley. I remember bitching.
Yeah.
And when I moved back to Ohio and I tried using it, it
didn't work.
Yeah, it did not work. Well, I remember telling my little brother that, and my mom was just, no.
It was like totally a California thing.
Yeah, right.
Totally.
Yeah.
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 It was like far out.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, hang 10.
Yeah.
All right. So why did it take almost 10 years to do this book?
Emails. Initially, when we first started, the first year, Cheryl wanted to show her kids that she just wasn't a mom, that she had a life at one point in time. And so she wanted to write.
We had actually,
we had taken this hitchhiking trip,
right.
And she wanted to write about it. So we spent a year writing about it, and we started talking about, you know, this might make an interesting book. So we decided we'd sit down and we talked it out and figured out what we wanted, where we wanted to go. And it took, there was a process. I know.
it's true. You know, when we started reminiscing, not just the hitchhiking part, but the stuff in college. And then I had to write the email to my kids and said, you know, your mom wasn't always.
You're going to find out some things about me that you may not know,
right?
And may not appreciate.
And both of the kids were on board, and they wanted to know more. And so we thought, well, we'll just throw everything in. But at the time, he was working nights, and I was working days. And so he would write on his breaks, and he'd send it to me late at night, which, you know, I was already in bed. And then I'd get up in the early morning, and I'd respond to it. And it went like that. For the first year, we just kind of wrote our memory, what we remembered. He had a better memory than I did. And then it just kind of took shape where we started letting the characters have their own adventures. You know, it's a compilation of events and experiences that we've experienced together and also apart, with the hitchhiking, all the different characters that came into our lives then, came into our lives one way or another, maybe not in the same way as the book, but certainly Lena and Chris had their own experiences with these characters as well as us.
We've had a really hard time trying to define what the book is. Is it a novel or is it a true story? And I guess it's a true story novel.
I think my nephew coined the term autobiographical novel.
Yeah.
Okay, there you go.
Like that? Yeah.
Sure.
So some of the stuff, it's all true in one way or another, maybe just not how it is presented at certain times.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. Having known you from high school and then reading this, I saw so many things about you that I knew that I remembered. One being the hair.
Yes.
I think I told you that yesterday because I remember that hair you had.
The hair had its own character. It's true. Did its own thing. So it was, the hair is just wild, frizzy hair. And of course, I grew up in California where during the 60s and 70s, it's all straight blonde hair.
Exactly.
Yeah. So the hair takes on a persona in the book.
The beach chicks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
God, what a pain in the ass they were.
Yeah. Oh, and the other thing. Okay. And Jim, I don't know how you felt about this, but
what?
I thought Lena was kind of a pain in the ass.
I absolutely think Lena was a pain in the ass.
On the hitchhiking trip or in general?
No.
I was almost going to say you.
I think Lena spent about half the story with a stick up her butt. Like she couldn't quite figure out what Chris was all about. She wanted to, but every time something happened, she backpedaled.
Yeah.
And went right back to the original stick up the butt again.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's, and then of course Chris was like, what happens, happens. It does, it's the universe. They're coming to get us or they're not.
Right.
It's okay.
Well, I have to say in real life, Cheryl was not quite like that.
Oh,
bad.
Yeah. Thanks for that.
Yeah,
otherwise you wouldn't be sitting here.
Right, right.
Yeah. We're talking about somebody named Lena now.
Yeah, right.
Cheryl.
Okay. Right, right.
That, yeah.
And we did have to create some controversy, so.
Some conflict, because if you had two nice goody-two-shoes in the story, nobody would really be interested.
Right.
I mean, you can't both be the loving, sweet people we really are. So
I didn't think either one of you were goody-two-shoes.
Yeah.
Lena had her own demons.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Definitely.
And, it was upbringing and a lot of different stuff. Growing up a Catholic, I'm going to assume.
Yeah.
All the hang-ups.
I'll stick my hand up on that one.
Yeah.
And then Chris, he just was too laid back. He just, the world was going to go by no matter what you did, so just accept it.
You totally got the book.
Yeah.
You totally got it. That's the message of the book, the two conflicting personalities. And during that era, it brings up questions, like free spirit was what Lena wanted to be. She was a wannabe free spirit, but, she had the hangups of her upbringing and stuff.
Right.
And talking throughout the years that we wrote it with our friends, and we've had Kent State friend reunions and things like that, and different, like some women felt pressured to be a free spirit, and some men felt pressured to be one too, And so this was all we tried to bring it out through the book because the 70s has a certain reputation, and 60s and 70s, individual people didn't always feel that way.
Yeah, so. 60s, it started about 65, and I think it probably wound up about 77. It probably started
before
easing
the
up.
Disco. It ended before. I always say like 65 to maybe 75.
Well, I used to have a T-shirt that I got in Alaska, and it's Chilku Charlie's and. In Anchorage, and it says Chilku Charlie says disco sucks.
It ended then, I think.
Yeah,
the 70s.
I've always felt that when you listen to the radio stations, how they say there's the 60s, 70s, it really should be like I found 55 to 65, 65 to 75,
right?
75
exactly.
To
it's center.
Yeah.
Off.
Yeah,
and then you could take the 80 to 85 part and just get rid of it.
I mean, because between 65 and 75, you had the Beatles, that were getting into their psychedelic age. You had the Love and Spoonful, which were just like a vanilla band.
Oh yeah,
but then you had Jefferson Airplane,
right?
Yep. That really, in 67, they took off like oh my God, that was the San Francisco sound.
Yes,
remember? Yeah. Oh, the psych sound.
I remember waking up
and they only would play it at night.
You know, growing up in the Valley, you probably remember they would only play like the psychedelic.
On that, what was that? Was it a Wolfman Jacks?
Wolfman Jack, he was
Bandit Radio. Late night, yeah.
Bandit Radio. And then, of course, you had KHJ, 93 KHJ, Boss Radio.
Robert W. Morgan.
Morgan in the morning, And I say, God, you guys had Lee Marshall and KHJ and all the boss jocks.
Boss jocks, right? That's right.
Yeah, they were. Yeah, but I can remember the music. And then all of a sudden, 75, you had a big switch again. Mm-hmm. And you started getting like Earth, Wind, and Fire and the big bands. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. I'm just like, Gordon Lightfoot just kind of did all the way through. He just kept going.
And still is. Yeah.
Oh, he's 6 years older than Jesus. Mm-hmm. God.
You know, I was thinking in the book. You were trying to come up with like what did we want to say, like how do we classify the book? And you always hear these stories that, especially when they're films, and they say, well, it's a coming of age story. And I thought, this is really like the second coming of age, if you excuse the connection. But because, you know, a coming of age story is usually going from, you know, you're just preteens into being a teenager. But this was really coming out of, you know, the stupid late teens and early 20s where we think we know everything and we're really idiots. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then really, and then in the end of the book really shows that, you know, you evolved into, you know, some growth into actual human beings.
Mm-hmm. Well, that was one of the problems with writing A Time to Wander is that we continually had to remind ourselves, you know, that we're talking like we're 60 now, and we have to think back. How would we say that when we were at 19, and how would we think?
That was tough because you really wanted to put your 60-year-old philosophy and sometimes clobber them over the head. You know, don't you get it? And we really had to go back and we rewrote quite a bit, saying, you know, they wouldn't say it like that. When we first started writing, Neil would write his part. And I would look at it and I'm like, oh, no. You know, I'm not going to put that in there, you know? And he'd say, well, that's how a 19-year-old guy thinks. Yep. And I would, you know, it took me a while to
rewriting her stuff. Yeah.
At 19 years old, guys think with their crotch.
Yeah. Right. And that's why I didn't want to include a lot of his stuff that was coming, you know, because it was, you know, like how a 19-year-old would think. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to gentrify it a little.
And the girlfriends always said, is that the only thing you ever think about?
Yes.
Well, yeah.
I tell you, you know, when we were talking about taking 8 years to write it, one of the pluses of that was for 8 years, I got to feel like I was 19 again. Mm-hmm. Every day I got up and would have to try and put that 19 mentality back into my head and start writing.
How did you remember all of this stuff? I don't remember being
19.
So... well, he has a phenomenal memory, but I had kept a journal. Mm-hmm. And so...
Does anybody ever get a hold of it?
Just me. And
that's why the book wasn't written until we were...
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I wasn't, you know, at that age, I did put in some things that, you know, would help us remember, you know, what was going on at the time. And when we did the hitchhiking trip, I didn't write in it at all because I was so afraid my mom would get it and ground me for life. You know? But he had a memory of that because...
Yeah. I'd been hitchhiking since I was 12 and used to just hitchhike around in the neighborhood. And over time, I probably hitchhiked about 15,000 miles.
Wow.
And one of the things, though, is that Cheryl and I had hitchhiked from Columbus to Minneapolis. And I would go up to see my grandparents who lived up in Minnesota, and we would take that trip. And every time I would take that trip, I would think, remember, okay, we got dropped off there by so-and-so, and we went there, and we got stopped here, and we sat here for a really, really, really long time. And
we're really, really, really cold.
Yeah. And somebody was getting really, really desperate next to me.
Uh-huh. Not all the time.
See, it's coming out now.
Yeah. Not all the time.
That's such a nice way of putting it, desperate.
Yeah.
Because I was thinking pissy.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was. And you hitched that route with other people, too. And so it was ingrained, you know, the stops and everything were, you know, pretty much in his memory. So he helped you know, when we first started this, and I said, I really would love to write that, but I can't remember all the details of that part of it.
You know, the scene where the guy out in the middle of nowhere picks you up.
Oh, yeah.
In Indiana.
Yeah. And he just starts railing on everything. And oh, my God. It is just like, holy shit, what are they going to do with this guy?
Yeah.
You know, who's going to club him over the head?
Yeah. Well, up to that point in my life and all these rides I've taken, I have probably experienced maybe a handful of people that were odd.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it wasn't anything that I couldn't even I could have handled the mm-hmm. 15. That was probably one of the worst.
I could tell. And that obviously is a true story.
Yeah.
It's pretty much true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, there are some things that maybe were, it's pretty much.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And this was her first hitchhiking.
Yeah. And right. My one and only, really. That,
We used to hitchhike around here. Like you said, you go from, you know, like if you wanted to get into Los Angeles.
Yeah.
Or
you go to the beach.
Yeah. Yeah. You'd hitchhike. And, I look back on some of the, there were a few strange ones. There were a few that you got in the car and you thought, maybe we should ask to get out to the next off-ramp, you know, just because it was not feeling comfortable.
Yeah. I only did one, and that was from Del Mar to Mission Bay.
Oh, okay. That wasn't very far then.
Well, it's 18 miles.
Yeah.
But then the guy tried to grab my crotch.
Yeah.
And when the car's doing 65 down Interstate 5, what do you do?
Yeah. Scoot far to the door.
As close to the door as you can get and hope to hell he's going to maintain control of the car.
Yes.
Well, you know, and that's one of the things. Like, so this was in, our book takes place in 1970. We actually went to Kent in 71 and did the hitchhiking trip in 72. And at that point, it did cross my mind that things were starting to get dicey with hitchhiking. And if I wanted to do it and have that experience, I had to do it. It was now or never,
right?
You know, and I was with a guy and it just seemed that, you know, it would have been the most romantic hitchhiking trip ever. And as you know, it didn't turn out that way.
I can think of a lot of things hitchhiking is, but never romantic.
No.
Well, I actually made a lot of friends that I had for years and years.
Really?
From hitchhiking. Yeah. And some of the most memorable points in my life are people that I met hitchhiking.
Okay, so is the Chris character pretty close to you?
Real close.
Real close.
Yeah.
Okay, so you were just kind of, you were laid back.
Yeah.
Just, you know, we'll go, and everybody's, you gave everybody a fair chance to be a cool person.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And, well, one of the things I found is that when you're hitchhiking, especially when you're going distances, people pick you up because, one, they're lonely. Right. They want somebody to talk to.
Keeps them awake.
Right. And it also, they get to talk about maybe something that's really personal to them, and they've got somebody they can say it to, and they know
there's no repercussions afterwards.
Right. They'll never run into this person again. And I got a lot of interesting life stories from people.
Oh, I'm sure you did.
And it was before the time of, you know, the iPhones and everybody recording or taking pictures. I mean, that's one of the things we tried to bring out, is that there was no connection. You know, you had to look for a payphone.
Right.
If you got in trouble, you got to look for one, you know. Mm-hmm. And usually, as we know, they were jammed up with dimes or quarters in them, you know. They usually didn't work.
Or the receivers ripped off.
Yeah. You know, so there was nothing. We've had questions like, why would these two go in the middle of winter? And people thought it was too unbelievable to even think of that somebody, you would just walk out and stick your thumb out and go somewhere. And those days are gone, and not know really what the weather was going to be or what, you know.
They're totally gone now.
They're totally gone. That you were just unconnected or had to really look for the connection.
Right.
So that was one of the things when we were writing it that was coming out. I'm like, boy, this is really a bygone era.
But now kids now look at you and they go, you did what?
Oh, yeah.
And then, are you out of your mind?
Yeah. It's too unbelievable is what we kept getting.
Yeah.
Nobody will ever believe this.
Yeah. I was in a writing group, and most of the people were 40 or younger. And when I start talking about hitchhiking, the look of horror in their face was like, I said, you know, I think I'm building a evangelical Christian monastery somewhere between the mountains in Pakistan and Afghanistan. What do you think? You know, they just would be, oh, I can't believe you're doing that. So, but it was a good time back then to hitchhike.
Now, there were a couple times when you were offered money.
Mm-hmm.
Once by, I guess it was your aunt.
Yes.
And was it Ella?
Ella. Yeah.
There was the gangster guy that wanted to give you a bunch of cash.
Yeah, he wanted to give you a wad of cash, and all you took was a $20 bill.
Yeah.
But you turned it down.
Yeah.
So really, this whole adventure, this is what you wanted to do. It wasn't like, we want to be comfortable, we want to do this in style. Right. We want this experience.
Right.
Well, I also, my upbringing is that was too much money. And that actually happened. Mm-hmm.
This guy
offered us money, and you know, there was, he had a Cadillac, dropped us off at his hotel.
No strings, just here's
money. Yeah, right. Yeah, and he just a great guy.
I was under the impression that the guy had a string of girls.
He did. Yeah. That was with the hotel.
He was dropping off the hookers.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
And that was a big controversy between the two characters, Lena and Chris, because, you know.
Gotcha.
Right.
Let's take a break, and then we'll get back to you in just a second. And Russ, you're on.
All right. So, you know, we're getting into the summer.
We are.
Yeah. And you're leaving on vacation, so your tickets have been purchased. The hotel reservations are confirmed. Your mail delivery has been suspended. Uh-oh, what about the dog? All Dogs Rule Day Camp and Sleepovers. It's the place your dog wants to be when they can't be with you. All Dogs Rule provides your best four-legged friend a place to run and play outside among orange trees and grass in a country setting. Your dog gets to be, well, a dog. All Dogs Rule offers additional services including individualized playtime, personal walks, swimming sessions in the creek, and training. Visit All Dogs Rule on the web at www.alldogsrule.com or give them a call at 805-524-1100. When your pup returns home, that smile on his face will leave you wondering, whose vacation was better?
The dog's.
Yes.
Well, as new writers, we all did it. We typed that last period. We sat back waiting for the cash to flow. Well, not even close. Sure, you've finished your manuscript, but it takes a whole lot more work to have a completed book. Interested in what it takes? It takes editing, rewriting, more editing, more rewriting, formatting, proofreading, more rewriting, more editing. Then if you're really lucky, you can devise a cover. You can get some printed, but mostly it takes absolute shameless self-promotion. Well, why not let the folks at Black Dog Publishing and Tuscany Bay Books help you do just that? For a small investment, we can do all of the above for you, and you get the finished printed book you dreamt about when you first started typing, and we can help you get some dollars in your pockets as well. And we'll give you all the tools you need for that shameless self-promotion. So we are here for new writers that don't have the foggiest idea what they're doing. Having learned it, we can share and help you get a book of which you can be proud and teach you how to promote it. So give us a call at 805-795-3165 or just send us a manuscript and let us to navigate the rest. You can do it at jchristina@tuscanybaybooks.com. Okay, we are going to be back in the studio. We have Shara Thompson, we have Neil Johnson, we have Russ Avison, and we have...
The Beatles.
You'll hear it, yeah. Just the first occasion you get.
I did with my thumb. Yeah.
As with Born to Be Wild, I thought this was a very appropriate song.
Yeah, love it.
We try to do that. We try to pick music for our guests.
Yeah.
This is to what they've written. Mm-hmm. Sometimes we miss. Most of them we have a hit.
Yeah, it's been pretty good.
Yeah.
We got a hit with this one.
Yeah, I would say we're probably 99% out of there.
Well, it's all Jim.
I do it. Yeah.
I just come in and nod my head. Go, yeah, that was a good one.
He reads the book. He comes in and goes to sleep. That's what Russ.
Yeah, pretty much. Pretty much. Hey, I want to find out, Neil. First of all,
yeah,
a little bit about your background, because obviously you both have writing experience. Mm-hmm. So, what have you been doing?
Actually, my writing experience picked up when I started working with Shara.
Really?
Yeah. Matter of fact, I'm extremely embarrassed about the things how I wrote back then, and over the process, I got better and better at it. I always had a creative mind. I knew that, but it was just a matter of how I wrote. But my background was after Kent State, I worked in bars, managed bars on the OSU campus, Ohio State campus.
Ah.
Did that for 8 years. And always worked with live entertainment and college students. And I was sorry I didn't keep a journal. The stories.
Absolutely.
The stories.
I think we got a little insight into that.
Yeah. There's a few that filtered through. And then I worked for a number of years at Ohio State in the psychiatry. And that was a lot like working in the bars. It was just altered states of consciousness. And in the bar, if you acted up, I had to throw you out. And if you acted up in the hospital, you had to stay. So it was, I really enjoyed both jobs. It was a wonderful experience. Also a great experience for raising kids.
Oh, I'm sure.
Yeah,
I'm sure.
I learned all the lessons that I ever needed to know to raise kids.
Oh, I'm absolutely certain of that as well.
And you have four?
I have two.
Oh, two. I'm
two.
Sorry.
I have a son in Las Vegas and daughter just got her master's degree in occupational therapy.
Oh, congratulations. So,
very cool.
And unfortunately, her fiance is got accepted to grad school at Michigan, the only black mark on our family record of 150 years at OSU. So,
what, you're not into Michiganers?
Oh, just the football. I you know what? I'm a Big Ten guy all the way, and the education is unbelievable at all those schools. Yeah. So we're thrilled to death he's there.
Excellent.
Yeah.
So, Cheryl, how about you?
Yeah. Well, after Kent, I went to Ohio U, and I was actually an English major, and I wanted to teach English, and the counselor told me, you know what, you're not going to ever get a job teaching English because of the Vietnam War. The boys that are getting deferments are becoming teachers, and to keep them out of the war, we're going to hire, you know, more of them. Sure. So I switched to journalism because it was an up-and-coming field for women back then, and when I got out, I worked in it about a few years, and then I was actually working at night in an Irish bar in Cincinnati, and the American Airlines crews used to come in, and they're like, what do you want to teach kids for? You need to travel the world. And as we all know, I really had a yen to travel. So I switched over and I went into travel. I worked for American Airlines for a while in reservations, and then I became a travel agent and stayed in travel about 22 years.
And you got to travel pretty much for free.
It was really a lot of good bennies. You know, met my husband, had two children, and dragged them with us all over the world. Consequently, you know, one, my daughter is living in London, and my son is an adventure tour guide.
Wow.
In Croatia, and, you know, they just got
hooked on Europe.
They got hooked. And so, well, in Asia, too. He's also goes into Asia. So, but, you know, and then after that, I still had that little thing. I really want to teach English. I still want to teach English. So I went back to school at age 50 and got a degree in adult education, teaching ESL. So it nearly killed me. I couldn't remember anything. You know, when you go back to school, I was with all the young adults that were really, you know, on it. And I was just, you know, always behind. But I did get it. And I ended up teaching English to refugees in Buffalo, New York for about 13 years. And still have my foot in the door. And it was, you know, teaching part-time. And so, I got to do exactly what I wanted to do, in a roundabout way.
Okay. So, now the big question.
Mm.
Who set the tone for the style of writing for this book? Which one of you? Or did it just happen?
It happened.
It naturally happened because of the emails.
Mm-hmm.
So he would say, oh, this is how I remember it. And then I would say, well, this is how I remember it. And so you know, it was he said, she said, right from the beginning.
Because the styles meshed very well.
Yeah. Yeah. We tried to have, that was one of the things, was kind of keeping that continuity, too,
yes.
from, even though the voices are different,
right.
There was something you could follow throughout the whole book.
Mm-hmm. Although, you know, it was interesting that when I first started to read it, and suddenly the perspective had changed, and I didn't realize that the title of each individual chapter had, you know, Lena or Chris. So I'm saying, wait a minute, what? And so I backed up, and then I think it was the second or third chapter. I go, okay, I see what's going on.
Yeah.
But there were still some times where I would flow from one chapter to the next and realize it had changed narrative.
Well, that's because some of the chapters are like a half a page long.
True. And also, and it doesn't just flip-flop back and forth. Sometimes you have two or three chapters that are still one person.
Yeah, Chris, Chris, and then Lena.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Lena and Rattlesnakes.
But you know, it was really, but it was really interesting that I think because of that style, it keeps you focused. You know, because sometimes you can be reading something that's enjoyable, but you know, your mind drifts a little bit. Mm-hmm. This, you couldn't really do that. You had to stay focused to see who was the protagonist. Of the
Exactly. Movie, you know? Exactly.
Right. Yeah. And you know, the interesting or unique thing about A Time to Wander is that it's written in the two different voices. And I've been in book clubs where one author will write and she'll write both the male and female. And mm-hmm. we will know, you know, that's her, you know, or mm-hmm. it's a male author and mm-hmm. he'll write the female voice and we'll know, you know, that doesn't quite sound like how a woman would think.
Mm-hmm.
So with this, there was just no question, you know, it was what it was between the two of us.
I did find though that the first part of the book, which is all about you developing the relationship at Kent. And then when you go on the road, it seemed not, I don't want to say that that there was a distinct difference in how it was written, but the flow is a little different. Maybe it was more, a little more storytelling about in the parts that when you were on the road trip.
Right.
One of the things that somebody had told me is that the hitchhiking trip mm-hmm. is almost, and I haven't read them all, mm-hmm. But a Canterbury Tales of hitchhiking. You know, that you have this collection of people all different from each other.
Every chapter is a different jabroni that just kind of pops in.
Right.
And possibly you felt like that because those people were telling their stories. And Lena and Chris were just kind of reacting to it and discussing it. So that's a good point. Yeah.
Although what really pissed me off is I don't know what happened to that guy who drove the bus.
Right.
Yeah.
Did you ever find out?
No. And that was... That was sort of a true story. We were picked up by a school bus,
mm-hmm.
but his story came from somewhere else. So it's a compilation.
Yeah. Gotcha. Well, it was very good.
Oh. Yeah, it was.
It's a favorite.
Very poignant, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's been suggested it could stand alone as a short story somewhere.
Yeah, because here's Chris driving the bus, and this guy sitting in the front seat just wailing.
Yeah.
But you know, also it keeps in the forefront of your mind that. That's how life is sometimes. There's things that go on and we don't always know either how it turns out or why things happen. It just, you move on and it's behind you.
Right.
Yeah.
Or you learn from it. And always, I want to also keep the backdrop of that era was the Vietnam War.
Right.
And so you always felt that at any time with any phone call, your life could change.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And it was on the news. It was in conversations.
Oh, it was everywhere.
It was next door.
I mean, it was just in your face 24 hours a day.
All the time. And especially for you being a veteran and stuff, you know, I'm sure that, you know, even stronger. You know, we were the war protesters, but even the Vietnam vets against the war,
mm-hmm.
You know, who were so, when we were in school, were already organized. It was just very, always with them. We would go to their meetings and march with them.
Mm-hmm.
Because I felt they knew the score if they'd been there, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't think we always knew the score. I think that that's an assumption y'all made.
Yeah.
Yeah. You didn't know either what was going on. I mean, really, when you see the documentaries and stuff, it's very revealing.
You know, you get picked up, you get put down in the middle of some place that you don't want to be. you got to do what you got to do to stay alive and get the hell picked up and put back.
Yeah.
Here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right.
You know,
that's right.
And if you're really lucky, you get to go do it again.
Yeah. Well, one of the things too with in a Time to Wander is the hitchhiking stories are, as Shara said, these are coming from the people who are driving. And that's one of the things I learned early on is that people want to talk, and I would let the driver, that was the price of the ride, mm-hmm. is to hear the driver's story. And I learned questions like, where are you from? What do you do? And what are your passions? And those would open up a whole new story from every driver. There would be some connection I'd hit with that, and that would make them comfortable with me and vice versa.
Sure. So you would have made a great salesman. Well, you know, yeah. Sales, if you are smart and you understand people, the people will tell you everything they need, mm-hmm. everything they want, and they'll talk themselves right into the sale, and then you just say, okay, we're done.
Yep.
And
here, let me get you a pen.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yes.
In fact, you can have it. Yeah. You can have the pen.
It's got my name on it.
It's the only one I have left.
Yeah, right.
And then you open up the code, and it's got 50 of them.
So have you all met each other's spouses and
gotten
together? And
they've been to my place and we've been to theirs and
right. Everybody's been on board.
And they're really good with all of this.
You know, I think we were worse than they were. I mean, you know, it was like, no big deal. They had some funny quips about it, you know.
Well, sure.
And, you know, but they've been real supportive the whole time and we've gone to the reunions together. So they've met the players in the books. These are all real people. And a conglomerate, you know, I mean, mm-hmm. we compile some of the personalities together, but some of them are like the roadkill queen, my one roommate, you know, she ended up.
That was so fun.
Yeah.
Open a closet, there's a dead animal in there.
She got extra credit for, you know, collecting roadkill, and she ended up being, you know, a criminologist or a criminalist, I think, sure, mm-hmm. and in science still, mm-hmm. you know.
Good thing you weren't in Arkansas. That would have been dinner.
So, and then Ginny. Which was, so we used a format where our internal thoughts were either bounced off a best friend. For me, it was Ginny.
Mm-hmm.
And for Chris, I'm sorry, for Lena, it was Ginny. And for Chris, it was his dog, Reggie.
Right.
And he would, you know, so that the reader could see what they were thinking. And also, Lena used her journal writing. So that was another instrument of writing that we used.
Well, Russ and I totally get the dog being killed part.
Yeah. Well, one of the things too that's interesting is Reggie, who was in Airedale,
mm-hmm.
When I first contacted Cheryl, she had just adopted an Airedale whose name was Reggie when she got him.
Yeah, I thought all Airedales were named Reggie.
That's kind of
and it wasn't but like a year before we reconnected that she had got this dog
Reggie was, you know, Chris will take walks and he'll talk to Reggie about his feelings toward Lena or the world or mm-hmm. this kind of thing, and then Lena has her friend Ginny, who actually in real life is a very good friend we still go to concerts, you know, and we mm-hmm. still kind of, we're going to Woodstock this year, you know, we still try and relive our teenager.
This is the 50th anniversary.
And we're going to go to Bethel Woods and relive that era.
Yeah, but,
you know, we missed Woodstock. Yeah. That's, you know, so we were a little too young and so this Woodstock we're going to.
You were young for Woodstock? Oh, maybe because I was 19, but I was overseas, so.
Yeah. And you're old.
And I am old. No, it's Woodstock? Yeah, 69, right?
Yeah. So
yeah, I was
it
in
was.
Vietnam.
Yeah. So
we were still in high school then.
Yeah. Mom wouldn't go for that.
Probably,
so.
No.
And I was in California. Yeah. Now I live in Buffalo, and everybody went to it because it was held, you know, a few hours away.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So
Woodstock was, I remember hearing about it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember hearing about the Manson murders, but I wasn't, you know, I was overseas.
So the one chapter we call Mud Jam, which is it was really based on Neil's experience at Watkins Glen. He actually went to the real Watkins Glen
650,000 people
in 73, right?
Yeah.
And so we didn't want to call it Watkins Glen because it's, you know, fiction.
Right.
And so we called it Mud Jam, but that whole chapter he wrote based on his experience there. So we thought that was kind of cool. Also for, you know, the boomers will relate, like we said, mm-hmm. our audience, but also kids, you know, they're into the music festivals and stuff. And what was it like back then?
Right.
You know, so we pulled that into everything we loved about this. It was poignant. We put in this book, you know.
The thing about Mud Jam, we arrived there. There's four of us. And within a half hour, it's really true, we all split up. With no plan of how we were going to meet up or where we were going to meet up.
And no cell phones.
No
cell phones. And you're looking around 650,000 people. All it is a sea of heads. And by the time I walked out far enough where I didn't have to worry about stepping on somebody. I turned around and looked back at the stage, and they were just these little itty bitty things on the stage.
Right.
You could barely see them. You were about a half a mile away from the stage.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
And it was still fun.
One of the best times of my life.
Well, I'm afraid we have to say goodbye.
Okay, bye, Jim.
We have pretty much killed this show.
Wow.
It goes fast.
It goes fast.
Yeah. So this has been most enjoyable.
Especially when you have fascinating guests.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. Thank you.
And a great book. The book is called The Time to Wander by Chira Thompson and Neil Johnson, or N.F. Johnson.
Johnson, mm-hmm. Yep.
And I want you to give me a question. What, N.F.?
N.F., just that... That was my...
Neil Funkenheimer?
Yeah. Okay. My great-grandfather was N.F. Johnson.
Oh, okay.
So. Yeah, a Swedish immigrant, one of the founders of Jolly Green Giant.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah.
Very cool. Well, anyway, it's The Time to Wander. It's good. It's available on Amazon and on your website.
It's on my website, sharathompson.com.
Right.
And there's also other short stories and things. But also we want to give a shout out to our publisher, Solstice Publishing.
Please do.
It's a small publishing agency. Well, maybe mid-sized now.
Yeah.
And they've just been wonderful to us. You know, we've shopped the book around for a while, and they've just been so supportive, and we can't say enough about them. Yeah. They're a wonderful publisher.
But you still have to shamelessly self-promote.
We have to We have to promote it, you know, but they're behind us 100%.
Yeah.
That's nice. Nice to know. And for those of you who don't know, Russ is getting married June 1st.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Yes, after a little over 20 years, we figured, why not?
Yeah. Yeah. Karen's a nice lady.
Yeah.
I really like Karen.
Yeah.
She loves Chinese food.
Yes.
Okay. This Thursday, we have Mark Watson. And his name of his book is Death Dresses Poorly. Have you started it yet?
No, that's my project to start
me too.
This evening.
I had to finish Cher's book first, so I mean, duh. And we'll be back Thursday at 7 p.m. right here on the Writer's Block and LA Talk Radio. And for us, for myself, Cher Thompson, Neil Johnson, we are out of here.